good to see you all out this morning. We hope that we can all say that it will be a benefit to have been here this morning and studying God's Word and singing songs of praise to Him, and we're thankful for your presence in doing that with us. As we talked about in Bible study this morning, and as Paul was directing the Corinthians and trying to fix some of the things that were going on with them, and he talked about how the Lord's Supper was a sharing amongst Christians, and how, you know, all of us partaking, we share in the body and we share in the blood of Christ, and it's good to be here to share together in our worship with you and toward God as well. So we're thankful that you are here to do that with us. We're going to talk for just a few minutes this morning about blind spots. When do we normally think about blind spots? When do they usually come to our mind? Well, typically, at least for me, it's when I'm in the car. I start thinking about blind spots. There's always, in all, basically every vehicle, there's a blind spot somewhere that we need to check our mirror, that we need to actually turn around and look. And I can remember the first time that we purchased a vehicle that had a backup camera. And I can remember, and I can't remember which kid it was, but I can remember one of the kids when I started to back up and I turned around to see what was behind me. They said, "Well, why didn't you just use the camera?" I'm like, "Well, even the camera typically usually will say, check your surroundings." Right? This is not the end all be all. This is a help. It's an assist. It's an aid. But it's not going to show you everything. You may have to turn. You may have to look. And I think sometimes we just put that car in reverse and we look at the screen, and I hope nothing is to the right or to the left of it. You know, I can see everything straight behind me. And so I'm going to go. And we sometimes make ourselves lazy, and there become more blind spots to us, even though we have mirrors and we have backup cameras to help us. I want to ask the question this morning, do you think we have some spiritual blind spots? I think we probably all have them in some way, shape, or form. They're hard to determine, aren't they? They're hard to find, because by definition, a blind spot is something that you cannot see. Right? You have to do a little bit of work to even see what is in your blind spot. And so, again, when we talk about spiritually speaking, I think we have to be careful, because we're not by nature going to see them directly. We're going to have to do some work. We're going to have to do some digging. We're going to have to do some looking to find those blind spots that we may have. Case in point, if you look at Revelation chapter 3, as Jesus is writing his letter to the church at Laodicea, he says, "The Amen, the faithful and true witness, the beginning of the creation of God, says this, I know your deeds, that you are neither hot nor cold. I wish that you were cold or hot. So because you are lukewarm and neither hot nor cold, I will spit you out of my mouth." We often relate this to maybe drinking coffee, right? We either want our coffee, and I don't drink coffee in either way, so it's foreign to me, but most other people understand it. You either want your coffee hot, or you want it iced, right? You want iced coffee, or you want hot coffee. So the person who wants hot coffee doesn't want their coffee sitting out and getting room temperature. The person who's drinking iced coffee does not want their coffee, iced coffee, sitting out, all the ice melting and it becoming room temperature, right? You want it either hot or cold. And when it's lukewarm, what do? We spit it out of our mouths. We either put more ice in it, or we throw it in the microwave and heat it up so that it becomes hot again, or it becomes cold again. We don't want it lukewarm. And Jesus says that to the church at Laodicea, that's exactly what you've become, right? You're not useful in either case. I would drink it hot. I would drink it cold, and I'm not going to drink it lukewarm. And notice what he says as the reason. "Because you say, I am rich and have become wealthy and have need of nothing. And yet you do not know that you are wretched and miserable and poor and blind and naked." How can you not see that? How can you think that you are rich beyond all imagination, that you've become wealthy and that you don't need anything. But Jesus says, I'm looking at you and you're wretched, you're miserable, you're poor, you're blind, you're naked, and you can't even see it. The reason? Well, it's their blind spot. They don't see it by nature. They don't see it naturally. They have to search. They have to look. They have to be told. How many times have we been backing up the car and one of our passengers has to say, there's a car. Don't we get offended by that sometimes? Tell me how to drive my car. Well, if I hadn't, you would have backed up into something. You would have hit something that was coming toward us. So don't be offended by that when they're trying to help. I'm talking to myself just as much as anybody else. Sometimes somebody has to point out your blind spot. And so that's what I want to do for just a short while today, is see if we can look at these blind spots and notice them in ourselves. I can see yours very easily. If you ever need to know what your blind spot might be, just come and ask me. I will be able to see it in you. We're all like that, aren't we? The question is, can I see mine? Can I see my blind? Yours are easy to see. They're blatant, right? They're plain as day, yours. But mine, I don't think I have any, right? Isn't that the attitude that most of us have? That, well, other people's are really easy to see, but I really don't have any. And so nobody needs to help me out. Nobody needs to look for mine. No, we need to be able to see our own blind spots, not just point out easily others. And so we understand that sometimes evidence doesn't even matter when we're talking about a blind spot. If you look at John chapter 12, starting in verse 9, in this context, Jesus has already raised Lazarus from the dead. He's already done many works, many miracles that the Jews would be able to see. And he raises Lazarus from the dead, and he's once again found himself in the company of Lazarus. And there's other people that are going to be around. And notice what some of the mindset is. It's not looking at the evidence, looking at the fact that Jesus has not only done all these great miracles, but raised someone from the dead, and that person is sitting in front of us. It says, the large crowd of Jews then learned that he was there, and they came, not for Jesus' sake only, but that they might also see Lazarus, whom he raised from the dead. But the chief priests planned to put Lazarus to death also, as well as Jesus, because on account of him, many of the Jews were going away and were believing in Jesus. Many of the Jews were doing the right thing. They saw the evidence and said, whoa, we've had a blind spot for this guy for a long time. But now he's raised someone from the dead. I don't think that we can just graze over that. While the chief priest said, you know what? Let's just kill all of them. Let's put them all back to death so that more people won't come to hear Jesus. More people won't come to see Jesus. They were so blind. The evidence did not matter to them. And so we need to be careful in identifying our own blind spots. I've just taken three this morning, blind spots that we may have. And normally, if you're driving in a car, if you hop into somebody else's car, are the blind spots not usually about in the same place? It's always like you can see so much in your mirror, but then always in that left corner and in that right corner, we kind of have to turn and look. If we're changing lanes or going to be making a turn, we kind of have to look behind us, don't we? They're always in those back corners. They're always in the same place. Well, spiritually speaking, most of the time, our blind spots are going to be in the same place. We just may not see them. So let's take the first one. The first one is, we have a blind spot when I don't want something to be true. Boy, we fight hard for that, don't we? If I want something to be true, I'm going to fight very hard to convince myself and others that that thing is true. And certainly this is a dangerous blind spot to have. If we don't want something to be true, we're going to find a way to make it true, especially when it comes to religion. I've done this my whole life. I've done it a certain way my whole life, and now to come to find out that it may not be right, Boy, we'll hold on to that for a long time if we can. And we have to be very careful. Look at the Jews again with Jesus. In John chapter 6 and verse 15, so Jesus, perceiving that they were intending to come and take him by force to make him king, withdrew again to the mountain by himself alone. And so we have this group of Jews who are now wanting to force Jesus to be an earthly king, the king that he did not want to be. He did not come to be an earthly king, but the Jews wanted him to be an earthly king. And so they were going to come and take him by force to make him their king. Now, in John chapter 6, in verse 66... same context here. As a result of this, his discussion on eating his flesh and drinking his blood and all of the difficult things that it means to follow Jesus, as a result of this, many of his disciples withdrew and were not walking with him anymore. And if you look at verse 22 in that same context, it says the next day. The day after they wanted to force him to be their king, now they've walked away from him. Because they don't want what Jesus truly is to be true. They wanted an earthly king. And so they were going to move on from Jesus to find their next earthly king. They didn't want to accept that he was a spiritual king to them. And so they move on to the next person. To the point that in Luke chapter 22 and verse 2, the chief priests and scribes were seeking how they might put him to death. For they were afraid of the people. He wasn't the king they wanted. And so now they wanted him dead. You see how hard we'll sometimes fight for something that we want to be true? Think about examples in Scripture. Mark chapter 16 and verse 16 with baptism. He who has believed and has been baptized shall be saved, but he who has disbelieved shall be condemned. It seems pretty simple. It seems pretty plain. But many refuse to believe that baptism is necessary for salvation because of what that might mean. They've learned this. They've talked about this. They've heard their entire life that what Mark 16 and verse 16 says doesn't actually say that. And yet it's a very simple sentence. And I've heard people talk for 40 minutes about this verse to tell me this is why it doesn't mean what it says. We'll fight hard for it. And I try to tell people all the time, when I'm telling someone something, when I'm giving them an example from Scripture that I believe is true, it's not because I want to believe it. In many cases, in almost all cases, it would be easier for me to believe what they believe. But that's not what I believe God is telling us. And so I have to stick with what God is telling us, even if it's more difficult for me. What about modesty? 1 Timothy chapter 2, starting in verse 9. Likewise, I want women to adorn themselves with proper clothing, modestly and discreetly, not with braided hair or gold or pearls or costly garments, but rather by means of good works, as is proper for women, making a claim to godliness. He says, I want women and men likewise to adorn themselves with proper clothing, modestly and discreetly. Why do some people fight modesty so hard? Because they don't want to dress modestly. And so they fight it and they say, well, that maybe doesn't mean what you think it means. I want to dress in a certain way because that's the way our culture dresses. And I don't want to look different than everybody else. And God says, in those cases, I want you to be different from them. I want them to see a difference in you. But sometimes that's hard when they see a difference. When I'm wearing something that is more covering, more modest than what someone else is wearing. Listen, I get it. I completely understand. Tony, you're old and fat. I don't even want to see me. Dressed immodestly, right? So it's easy for me, but see, I'm younger and I'm healthier and I'm in better shape. So people might want to see me. Well, it may be true that they might want to see you, but you shouldn't want them to see you in that way and in that light. We need to be modest in how we dress, but sometimes it's hard because we don't want it to be true. We want to dress a certain way. What about when God tells us to forgive? That difficult from time to time? Matthew chapter 6, verses 14 and 15. For if you forgive others for their transgressions, your heavenly Father will also forgive you. But if you do not forgive others, then your Father will not forgive you your transgressions. Why don't we forgive people? Surely we all want God to forgive us. Why won't we forgive someone else? I think it probably all boils down to I don't want to. What they did to me was wrong, it was hurtful, and I don't want to forgive them. What if God took that attitude with us? Tony, what you did to me was very hurtful. Maybe it bordered on idolatry. You put something else ahead of me, in front of me, and that hurt, and I don't want to forgive you. We say, God can't say that. God wouldn't do that. But notice in Matthew chapter 6, verses 14 and 15, there's a prerequisite to God forgiving us. And that's that we be willing to forgive others as well. You know, when I was teaching at the college, there was a student that came and wanted to take my class. And I had to ask, have you taken accounting too? Well, no, not yet. I haven't taken account. Well, accounting too is actually a prerequisite for this class. So I can't allow you in. Well, I really need to take it. It doesn't have anything to do with me. I can't. You need to take this class first before you can take this class. And that's what God tells us about forgiveness. I can't forgive you because you haven't forgiven others. It's a prerequisite for me forgiving you. But so oftentimes we say, I don't want to. What they did hurt me so badly. And there can be many other examples, but I think these three suffice. Do we see that when we don't want something to be true, how hard we will fight for it? What about when our blind spot involves someone that we love? Here's probably where I see it most often. Friends and family members are involved here. And when we think about the carryover, maybe from baptism, many people don't want baptism to be right. They don't want baptism to be necessary or true because of what it means for their past friends or family members who maybe weren't baptized. What does that mean for them? What am I doing? Am I condemning them? If I agree to this and I say baptism is necessary, am I condemning them? You can't. You can't condemn them. I heard a story once that I think illustrates this very well. It was a man who his father had passed away, and his father had owned a store, a general store, for 30 years. And so his father passes away, and he's called in, and he's trying to get everything in order, and they're going to sell, trying to decide if they're going to sell this store that he's had or if they're going to try to come in and run it themselves. But there was an auditor that came in, and was a table where he used to cut fabric. And when the auditor measured from nail to nail, he nailed a piece here, measured it, nailed a piece here. He said, it's only 35 inches. He said, well, wait a minute. It should be 36 inches. That's supposed to be a 36-inch piece. And so the man whose father had passed away said, you mean to tell me that every time my father sold a piece of fabric that he cheated his customers by an inch of fabric every single time? And the auditor simply said, no, I'm not saying that at all. I didn't know your father. He may have been on the up and up. Anything could have happened. What I'm telling you is that if you continue to use these marks, that you will cheat all of your customers out of an inch of every piece of fabric. Do we understand the point? We can't judge someone else. But what does God tell us to do? Even if I become a child of God by baptism into Jesus Christ, even if my family and my friends, even if none of them did it, I can't condemn them for anything. God will judge. But what is it that we need to do to make our lives right with Him? Don't fight it just because it's someone involves someone that we love. And I would say that this thought process, whether it's a family member or a friend, is just a really bad approach to friendship. You're not a very good friend if you just want to agree with everything that your friends say. If you just want everything that your friends say and do to be right, it's not a really good approach to friendship because they may not always be right. In John chapter 8 and verse 31, so Jesus was saying to those who had believed in Him, if you continue in My word, then you are truly disciples of Mine. And you will know the truth, and the truth will make you free. He says, if you continue in My word, then you will be truly disciples of Mine. Don't we want our friends and family to be followers of Christ? If they're not following after what He said, then they're not friends of Christ. And so if we're not warning them about that, and again, we're doing that in a loving manner and in the right way, but if we're not warning them, then what kind of friend are we? In Proverbs chapter 27 and verse 6, it says, faithful are the wounds of a friend, but deceitful are the kisses of an enemy. Faithful are the wounds of a friend. I'm doing this. I'm saying this. I'm telling you this because I love you. And I want you to do what is right. When I was in college, I had four roommates. There were five of us in there. And there was an argument happening with two of our roommates when they came in to the door one day. And one of them was just irate with the other one, and the other one was just kind of smiling a little bit. It wasn't a real fight, but he basically said, what's going on? What's wrong? And the friend that was so upset says, you're not going to believe what he did. I was walking across the street, and there was a car coming, and I didn't see it. I had my back turned. I was facing him, and I was watching him. And all he said to me was, English, you're about to get hit by a car. And he said, what? I didn't hear you. He said, English, you're about to. His last name was English. His first name was Tony, too, but that's neither here nor there. He said, English, you're about to get hit by a car. And he was so upset because he didn't hear him, and he had to ask him to repeat it. And he said, you're about to get hit by a car. And so if I turned around just in time to hear the brakes squealing, and I had to jump out of the way. And he said, if that was me, if you were, I would say, look, you're about to get hit by a car, look out. I would be screaming it and shouting it, not just in conversation saying, hey, you're going to get hit by a car if you don't move. And I think at times that's what we do to our friends when it comes to spiritual things. We want to whisper real low, like, you know, I'd do this if I were you. What? No, never mind. Right? Because we don't want to offend them. We don't want to, you know, turn them off to something. He says, faithful are the wounds of a friend. Listen, if I'm in danger, if I'm in trouble, I want you to tell me. I want you to shout it so that I see the danger and I can move out of the way, whether that's physically or spiritually. The worst is when it happens with our kids. And I think here is where pride might become a little more involved than what we would think or what we would like for it to be. In Proverbs chapter 29 and verse 17, we're told, correct your son and he will give you comfort. He will also delight your soul. How are we going to get comfort from our children? How are we going to delight in them? To correct them. Don't just let them go. Teachers, maybe it's worse for you guys, but I know, like, from the time that I was in school, this would happen, and it's only gotten worse. It was probably few and far between when I was in school, but it only gets worse and worse. But teachers, have you ever had a parent come and say, why is my little Johnny getting such a bad grade? He tries so hard. He does his homework. He does all that. Why is he getting a bad? It's your fault. Because you're not teaching him right. Right? They want to blame you because little Johnny can't do anything wrong. Right? We have this blind spot when it comes to our kids. Well, little Johnny was just in the wrong place at the wrong time. He would never do that. Right? He would never do the thing that those other kids were, the other kids were doing it. But my little Johnny, he would never do that. He was just at the wrong place at the wrong time. You see how we can become blind when we start talking about our kids? Oh, no, never. My mom never had that attitude. I don't know where I missed out. But, you know, we see the cartoons where, you know, the student and the parent are standing here like this, looking at the teacher sitting down. If that was of my life, it would have been the teacher and my parents standing there with their arms crossed, looking at me sitting in a seat going, "Don't you believe me, Mom?" She'd probably say, "No, I don't. I believe her." But we can become so blinded when it's our own kids that we just want to let things go. We want to let our kids sow our wild oats or sow their wild oats. And what does the law of the harvest tell us? If you sow wild oats, what are you going to reap? Wild oats. When God tells us, and we'll talk more about kids tonight, our children tonight, but when God tells parents or God tells children to obey your parents, what is he telling parents to do? Give your kids some instruction. Command your kids to do certain things so that they can obey you. Don't let the child rule the house. You are the head of the household. You rule the house and you make them listen. That's not mean, but he tells us, correct your son and he will give you comfort. He'll make the right decisions later in life. And he will also delight your soul. The last thing that I want us to look at this morning is that sometimes we have blind spots when it comes to having to admit that I'm wrong. Listen, we've all been to this place. Romans chapter 3, verse 23, "For all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God." We've all been there. All have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. We're there, right? Can we all say, "Yep, that's me. I'm with you." How many of us have been here in Luke chapter 15 and verse 18? Where the prodigal son says, "I will get up and I will go to my father and I will say to him, Father, I have sinned." No. See, I want you to go back to "all have sinned." Because that brings all of you people in with me. So let's stick here. Right? I don't want to go to Luke 15 and verse 18. Because then I have to say, not everybody else, but I have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. Can you imagine Luke chapter 15 if we took it in the "all have sinned" context? Where the prodigal son comes home and he says, "Look, pops, all your kids have made mistakes." Does that feel as humble? Listen, all of your kids have made mistakes. That includes me. I'm coming back. Lucky you. Does that make the impression on you that him humbling himself and saying, "Father, I have sinned against heaven and in your sight, and I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me as one of your hired slaves." Which feels better to you? I think it's obvious. We would not accept this prodigal son coming back and saying, "Look, Dad, Pops, whatever you want to..." I just used Pops because it sounded much less respectful. All of your children have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. I want you to look at Luke 15 and verse 29. Because the older brother says, "Not me." It was just him. He has the same attitude. "But he answered and said to his father," this is the brother, "Look, for so many years I have been serving you and I have never neglected a commandment of yours." Right? You think that older son has never neglected a commandment of his father? If you believe that, I have some property that I would like to sell you. Kidding. We don't believe that, do we? We don't believe that. Now, the older son was there. He didn't leave. He stayed. He was there. He was helping his father. I get that. But do you see the attitude? It's no different than the younger son. In fact, it's worse in this scenario, because at least the younger son realized what he had done, and he said, I have sinned. I have fallen short of the glory of God. And so I'm coming to ask forgiveness, and you don't even have to fully forgive me. Make me as one of your hired slaves, but have a little compassion on me, please. And the older son says, I deserve everything that I get, because I have never forsaken a commandment of yours. Well, that's not true, and I think we all know that that's not true. Pride is always going to get in our way. Proverbs 11 verse 2 says, when pride comes, then comes dishonor, but with the humble is wisdom. Peter in Galatians chapter 2 fell into that same trap, and Paul had to approach him to his face because he was being hypocritical. And at some point, Peter was going to have to admit that he was wrong. He was wrong for doing what he did. Pride gets in our way. See, Peter didn't want the Jews to look at him and think less of him. And so he did something that he shouldn't have done because of pride. How do we deal with a blind spot? Well, how do you deal with it in the car? You have to look, right? You look in your rearview mirror, you look at your backup camera, maybe you turn around to see what it is that you might be hitting. I think the same is true when it comes to the spiritual aspect of it. Let's go back to our context from this morning in James chapter 1. This you know, my beloved brethren, but everyone must be quick to hear, slow to speak, and slow to anger. For the anger of man does not achieve the righteousness of God. Therefore, putting aside all filthiness and all that remains of wickedness, in humility receive the implanted word, which is able to save your souls. Here's where we get to our context. But prove yourselves doers of the word and not merely hearers who delude themselves. If anyone is a hearer of the word and not a doer, he is like a man who looks at his natural face in a mirror. For once he has looked at himself and gone away, he has immediately forgotten what kind of person he was. But one who looks intently at the perfect law, the law of liberty, and abides by it, not having become a forgetful hearer but an effectual doer, this man will be blessed in what he does. What do mirrors tell us? It's the truth. Don't mirrors tell us the truth? Assuming that mirror is clean. We like to look in the mirror and say, I can't be that big. I can't be that ugly. All right, we want it to be lying to us, but those mirrors, they're just showing you what is. Right? We have to face it. When we look into the mirror, we kind of have to face the truth. It doesn't matter how I think I look, or it doesn't matter how I want to look. The mirror tells us the truth. And so when we do that to the mirror of our soul, what do? Do we put it down and do we walk away and say, you know what, I'm probably fine. I probably don't look as bad as I think I do. Or do we truly look at it and use it and say, I've got some changes that I need to make in my life? Four thoughts I want to leave you with. Number one, you need the mirror. We all do. Physically, spiritually, we all got to look in the mirror from time, even if we don't like to. Even when we walk by the mirror and we see a person that, sometimes I shock myself, right? Because my hair is not as, it's not as gray as in my mind as what it is on my head. And so when I look into the mirror sometimes, ooh, there's a lot of gray there. It's probably more gray now than it is brown, than what it used to be. And sometimes I'll walk by and I say, that can't be my image. I can't look that old. Yeah, you are. It's telling you the truth. You can walk away and think whatever you want, but it's telling you the truth. You need the mirror, the spiritual one. We have to constantly be looking at it to see if we're right in the sight of God. It's not enough just to have the mirror. You have to look into the mirror. Now, you can have mirrors all over your house, but if you close your eyes and you never look in any of them to see what you look like, it's not going to do you any good. You can have as many of these as you want in your home. And I've got a bunch of them. And they're all different translations. And some of them are good translations. Some of them are bad translations. I got a lot of them. They don't do a whole lot of good unless you open them. I've probably got 30 of them just on my phone. Different translations of the Bible. Doesn't do much good if we don't open them. So not only do we need the mirror, but we actually have to look into the mirror. And once we look into the mirror, we have to be honest with ourselves about what we see. This is how we're going to remove our blind spots. If I look into the mirror, into a physical mirror, and I walk away and say, Tony, two thumbs up today, you look great. Am I ever going to be motivated to change anything? No. We have to be honest with ourselves when we look into our spiritual mirror, which is God's Word. If I looked into here and said, you know what, Tony, thumbs up, you're good to go. Am I ever going to change? No. There's no need to. There's no reason to. We have to be honest with ourselves about what we see when we look into the mirror, both physically and spiritually. And then finally, we need to do something about it. We have to be determined to change once we are honest and see the places that we need to change in our lives. We have to make the determination that we are going to change. Where are you this morning? Are you in a place where you've looked in the mirror and said, I don't like what I see? If you're here and you're not a child of God, I would encourage you to become one. You can do that this very morning, and you're not going to know everything. I don't know everything. The elders don't know everything. We're still learning. We'll always be learning. But you know that Jesus has told you that he that believeth and is baptized shall be saved, and he that believeth not shall be condemned. I would encourage you to do that this morning. If you're here and you are a child of God who has once done that, but yet has fallen away, maybe has forgotten to continue to look in the mirror, and then all of a sudden you turn and in their blind spot and you see how many people you've run off the road. You say, I need to make some changes in my life. We're here to pray with you. We're here to pray for you. If we can help you in any way, please come have a front seat while we stand and while we sing.